You there, man?
I'm here.
Hey, what's up, buddy? All right, so real fast, you guys are listening to the Nicholas Paul Arnold Hour, and I am so lucky to be joined by the one, the only, the sexy Mr. Aaron Nordstrom of Gemini Syndrome.
Oh, my.
And the whole wide world.
The whole wide world.
Dude,
That's quite the intro, my friend.
Well, you got the sexy part, right?
Bald is beautiful, man.
Whatever it takes, Mr. Nordstrom.
That's right.
How's it going, man? It's good to hear from you.
It's going good, man. It's going good.
What's been going on since we parted ways?
A lot of crazy personal stuff. Working through some personal traumas or whatever, but we'll leave that for another time and maybe later in the talk.
Yeah,
beyond that, man, diving into this record, trying to get progress on it.
I know there's a crap ton of songs.
Been teaching voice lessons on Skype for a few months now. I've been working on some solo side stuff that's like really more electronic. It was more of an experiment to like, I got a workstation in my house finally for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
So I have the capability now to play and write anytime, which is awesome. And it's all under my control. I've never had that ability in the past since I had like my Tascam 4-track when I was like a teenager. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's opened up a whole new world. It was really just an experiment to try to like learn how to use I started on GarageBand and I've upgraded to Logic at this point. And just trying to learn the ins and outs. You know, after doing a few records in my life, I have an idea of the process, but to actually learn the key commands and actually be able to physically do it myself has been a total trip, man. So I've been kind of immersed in that.
Yeah. Well, I remember you sent me a couple demos that I added. You remember the little demo I sent back to you with one of your electronic pieces. It was really cool. You sent me three of them.
Mm-hmm.
They were all really cool and very experimental. They kind of remind me of like a Aaron Nordstrom version of like Devin Townsend's like noise albums, you know.
Word.
You know,
I'll take that as
it sounded awesome. But for the people who aren't in the loop, can you just kind of explain your background, you know, talk about the beginning of Gemini Syndrome and, you know, all that stuff for people who don't know?
I mean, I'm the singer and one of the founding members of Gemini Syndrome. Alternative metal, it's been called, band that you play guitar with in.
I do.
Is
it considered metal still? Because like the riffs are really like the first album's heavy as hell, but the second album seems to have a more rockier version.
I thought there was actually more metal elements at places in the second record, to be honest. I think the first album was a little more raw.
That might be the better way to put it then. Okay. That's probably the best way to explain it then.
It was a little more raw, but you find that trend in almost every band on the planet, unless the band just continues to write the same song over and over again, or the same record over and over again. But I think in general, any band, any musician and, you know, or artist for that matter, who's continually doing and creating things is going to evolve. It's going to mature. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I've noticed that, and actually, especially some of the brutalist bands, like take Opeth for example. Mm-hmm. I think you and I have talked about this.
It's the first one that came to mind. It's the first one that came to mind. Yep.
Yeah, because if you listen to, they have so many. What was I don't want to sound like a total noob right now. What's the first album or first release called?
My Arms, Your Hearse.
Yeah, if you compare that to. What's their latest one? Sorceress, that's out?
Not sure what the latest one is. Not that I lost interest in them, but I just got distracted and was listening to other things. But the last album I was really, really, really into was Watershed.
Yeah, that one is pretty badass because I think that was a transition that they had, like that album, into what they are now, because it still had their, like, you know, their earliest stuff up leading up to Watershed, like their heavier shit. Mine is Damnation, of course. But, you know, they were still like a brutal, you know, sweet death metal band. And then when you hear Watershed, it's like you could hear that transition into like the psychedelic funk. It, not really so much funk, But, you know, that psychedelic feel.
Yeah, that was definitely the record after Watershed. It was when they started. It was almost that vintage kind of sound, which was cool. Yeah, well, which was cool.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, they do it in a badass way. Because I was talking to one friend about how there are some bands that they are so blatantly obvious where they're trying to sound old school because to be cool, you know, when they're like a newer modern band, it's like, oh, hey, we're going to do like a jazzy part to sound cool. But it's like Opeth does it in a really original way where they make it their own thing.
Absolutely. Porcupine Tree, yeah. Steven Wilson is a really good example of that too. Putting yeah, different elements and, in.
Exactly. And so perhaps with Gemini Syndrome, you know, because I've noticed that I wasn't part of the second album or the first album, but I can definitely hear, I can hear a difference as far as the writing styles go. And like you said, perhaps maybe the first album's more raw and harder and heavier, you know, and it seems, and you know, I mean, you would know this, but to me, it seems that the songs sound angrier in Lux.
Oh yeah,
it's funny. And the lyrics in the new one sounds more emotional. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny that you said exactly that because I was kind of thinking that same thought. That I'm not as pissed off anymore, man. I think there was definitely still the glimmer of hope that I try to incorporate.
Mm-hmm.
Really, for selfish ends, it's a reminder to me, you know what I mean, to try to keep the silver lining in mind. But yeah, definitely, you know, when I wrote all the lyrics for Lux, man, I mean, I was in a much younger, much more aggressive,
yeah,
and fucked up place in my life at the time.
Yeah,
so. And it was, you know, dealing with the beginning of my life, my early years. And there was a lot of angst when I was a teenager, man, and a little kid. There was a lot of trauma that happened.
Sure.
So talking about those subjects just kind of rendered a more aggressive, angry tone anyway.
And exactly, yeah.
I found even now, like, while I'm writing this stuff for this newest album, I'm really trying to get a lot more melody even than I've had in the past, which kind of lends me to not scream as much. It's still there. I'm still using it, but the music itself is pretty heavy in some spots.
Yeah.
And like tying the melody over the top of a brutally heavy part is really fun and really challenging. And I think it sounds really cool.
Well, I tell you, I know it sounds cool. I, you know, I firsthand know it sounds cool because I have the liberty of hearing, you know, what's being put out so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have that pleasure to hear it, and I agree. You know, like what you did with my my January demo that everyone thankfully dug.
Yeah, man.
You know, sounded really awesome.
Yeah, that's still one of my favorite tunes that we've done thus far. So,
is that right? Mm-hmm. Like what you've done, like music, like musically, or what you've done vocally
in this record?
Really?
Yeah, I love that tune.
Well, I take that. I honestly take that as a compliment because, you know, I've told you, like, you know, you and I, we had a lot of good talks while on tour. You know, because when shit's breaking down, you have time to.
What else are you gonna do on the side of I-40 in Arizona at 3 a.m?
Bro, you got to go full beast mode and look into the ether.
Oh, don't even let it be in the past, man.
I won't unleash the beast.
Always forward, man. Always forward.
But yeah, like, I'm very grateful that you guys especially you liked that track because I've told you countless times while we had our talks on tour, like I listened to Gemini as a fan for, you know, a few years before even meeting anybody,
right.
You know, even before meeting Jim, which is how I met Brian, which is how I met all you guys, you know? So it's cool, like, getting to relate to those lyrics, as I've told you I did, and then getting to actually play them, because now I get to actually, like, get the inside scoop on what those lyrics mean, and, you know?
Sure.
And instead of just relying on my interpretation.
Sure. It's funny you bring that up too. That's been kind of my plan for this record is I don't want to disclose anything about any song unless it's painfully obvious what the lyrics are about. I'm not going to talk about it.
Is that right? Wow, okay.
Because I want, you know, I was reading one of the quotes on... Oh, sorry. My phone's beeping at me. Anyway.
No worries.
Hold on. I was reading this quote from Dave Grohl.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking about the cool thing about music is that you can be playing to a crowd of 10,000 people and that song can have 10,000 different meanings.
Yep, exactly.
And while I do, I personally enjoy hearing what the songwriter, you know, meant, especially if it's, you know, pretty metaphorical lyrics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear what the artist wrote, but at the same time, it's like, I'll probably eventually disclose it. And it's not like this huge conspiracy or something that I'm probably making it sound like right now, but
sure.
I want people to live with their own idea for a little while before I start talking about what these songs are about. I kind of did that with Stardust, but like
yeah.
Stardust is an interesting song in the sense that like, it is kind of an homage or a love song to the people in my life when I was a kid, right? Some of which are still involved in my life. And it is very much a caring song, but there's also some really dark parts of that song, and that mm-hmm. it ends up being like people, like couples' songs, right? It's like their song at their wedding or whatever, you know what I mean? And
exactly.
I don't want to ruin that for anybody by telling them, you know, what the verses are really about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Because if it has that much power and that much meaning for somebody, I'd rather them run with that. And I know mm-hmm. what it means to me, but it's cool that it can have all these interpretations, man.
Yeah, I mean, there are some songs like, well, Stardust sounds, Stardust has that romantic kind of feel in a sense, because, you know, it's a guy singing, you're perfect, you know,
Right.
It's no mistake. Like, it's like, okay, you're singing to someone, but then, like you said, it has those dark elements to it, you know, which you might want to keep to yourself, or, you know, you want people to interpret in their own way, which I tell you, like, I thought it was something completely different, you know,
right.
You and I talking about it. I was right. Like, I didn't realize those dark elements. I remember being like, oh shit, I didn't realize that. I didn't know that meant this, you know, and it's actually funny to me because it makes me think, how many other songs have I listened to where I completely was way off with my interpretation?
You and everybody else, man.
Yeah. You know, but that's the one I'm talking about. Like, now I feel very grateful because I have that luxury to, you know, talk to you about some songs that helped me get through some shit times in the past, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really cool. And I've taken advantage of that because you and I have had those long talks on the, what highway were we on?
The 40.
The 40, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good old 40.
We had a lot of time to talk about that. And, or, you know, like my buddy from Butters, you know,
yep.
A lot of songs that helped me get through a lot of crap. I got to ask in a cool, in a friendly way, like, hey, what does this mean? You know, who fucked you over? Who, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But then Gemini's got those other songs like Remember We Die. That's very blatantly obvious what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And your lyrics, you're very direct.
Yep.
I think the most vulnerable, if you want my honest opinion, I think in Gemini's entire catalog, I think your most vulnerable line is in Remember We Die, on the bridge.
When yeah.
you say, I used to ask the angels to carry me away. It's like a very deep line, in my opinion. And maybe I'm wrong, but to me, it sounds like it's a very deep moment for you.
It was. Absolutely.
And do you, lyrically, do you kind of find yourself maybe pulling back a bit? Like, do you sometimes catch yourself getting too personal or too direct? Or do you kind of have an easy flow when you write your lyrics that are finalized?
No, I don't really see any. There's no barrier or no threshold or anything.
Okay. Okay.
If it comes out, it comes out. You know, I intend on attacking some pretty personal shit on this record. Probably more so than I have in the past, actually.
But you're going to find that medium, the happy medium to keep it more melodic?
So far, as heavy as they have been in some contexts, they're in their heaviness, they're still melodic. There's still some really cool chord changes. and really cool just movement throughout the songs that, I don't know, man, it's exciting. Like,
you know what it is? I think, I'm not so much talking about myself, because you have, you know, we have Meigs writing for the songs too, so I'm sure that adds another element.
Absolutely.
You know, because he's got, Meigs has got his own, like, unique style of playing. It's so interesting the way he writes his riffs.
Yep.
And I'm sure that kind of encourages you lyrically, right? Like, does that influence what you sing about, or kind of like what the feeling it gives you, or does it kind of influence the way how you sing it?
Probably more how, because it is different. It gives me options to do things I haven't maybe done in the past, or
okay,
like he hears progressions in a way that I don't, that I wouldn't think of, you know, like outside of the box movement of chords that like have to really, you have to really think about how a melody works over that. Cause what I don't want to do, like, I'm not going to cut screaming out by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever want to have a screaming part because I can't write a melody. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
if the part deserves a scream and deserves a screaming part over it vocally, then so be it. That's what the part needs. And I'm down to write that stuff, because, you know, I like screaming, because sometimes I am still mad. But
sure.
But overall, like, I don't want it to be a cop-out because I can't think of something cooler. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
So it's been challenging. It's cool. It's making me think in different ways musically. And on top of it, man, teaching voice lessons has been such an interesting tool for me.
Sure.
Because I'm going back to like the fundamentals of music theory and vocal technique at the same time. And I'm using the piano a lot more. So just my basic knowledge of things like key signatures is like getting really profound again. It's getting really like, I can whip that shit off like the top of my head. Like I could, when I was a kid, when I was studying it all the time. And it makes the writing process a little different too, because now that theoretical part of my brain is activated a little more.
Exactly.
So it's been kind of trippy, man.
It makes you see where your flaws are, you know, like, or where you need work, or where, you know, where you're lacking it when you teach. Because another, I don't know if everyone knows this about you, you know, because you and I are both martial artists as well.
Uh-huh.
And what's the style that you studied again with Sifu?
It's called Chu Ka Tonglong. It means Chu family Southern praying mantis.
That's what it is, Southern Praying Mantis. That was the one. There's so many freaking kung fus out there. But with that, because I don't teach guitar or piano to anyone, but martial arts, whenever I give private lessons, when I teach martial arts, it always helps me brush up on my fundamentals. I don't know if you ever, like, taught much.
Oh, yeah. I have a handful of students.
Yeah, and would you agree that, like, when you're teaching, it's like, oh, I got to brush up on that, too.
When you're teaching anything. The fundamentals are the most important part of any art form, or any paradigm, for that matter. You know, even if you're doing mathematics, in order to do advanced mathematics, you have to have a thorough understanding of the basics. You have to.
Exactly.
If you don't, there's nothing to build on, so.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure of, you know, the first half of the Absolution tour, you know, Sifu came, and it was nice to meet him and get to know him and have those cool talks. You know, I learned a lot from Sifu.
I'm sure he'll come with us again at some point if we can manage it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, he's an awesome, you know, you lucked out. I mean, I always said that I lucked out at my teachers, but you have a really great teacher.
Thank you.
You know, like, it wasn't just like, oh, Nick, you know, I'm tough, I can kick your ass. Like, no, Nick, you know.
Hey, he's a profound human being.
I'm going to teach you a life lesson.
Right. He's a profound human being.
Yeah. But he's one of those guys where it's like he just knows everything, and he's not cocky about it. He's not arrogant. He just knows everything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, somehow. He's one of those guys. Somehow. Possibly the most interesting person I've ever met.
Yeah. And
very
and
possible. Then,
you know, we discovered that he was friends with my uncle, who was also a martial artist.
He was his teacher.
Yeah. He was his teacher, yeah. And I'll never forget when he realized, he's like, oh, you're Chris's nephew. You're Arnold. I was like, yeah. He's like, now I understand you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that's why I have my fucked up quirks.
Right. Don't we all?
Yeah. But, you know, I feel very grateful because not many people like you and I, at least as musicians, I feel like everyone has their own outlet of some sort. But I feel like creative people are very lucky because they get to express things while they're using an outlet. You know, some people can just like let's say like a boxer, you know, he's having a bad day. He's going to just, you know, hit the bag for an hour and feel better. But as a singer, you know, or like an artist of some sort, they get to express it to other people so they know how they're feeling, you know?
And sure.
Now, would you agree that, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword because, like, yeah, it's great. I get to be creative. But then as an artist, I feel like we feel deeper than the average person.
That's exactly what I was going to reply to you. It's a blessing and a curse in that sense.
Yeah.
Because in order to express, especially darker emotions, you have to tap into darker places. And it means that you've had to have seen darker things.
You had to suffer.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they weren't sure if the statistic was totally accurate, but it was like ballpark that musicians are 300% more likely to suffer from depression than a non-musician, which
really?
I buy that 100%, man. I buy that 300%.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm right there with you. But do you think it's because of the actual pursuit of being a musician or just because they're creative and intuitive and feel hard, like just from the get-go? Or is it like a mixture, you know, because the life of pursuing a musician can be depressing as well.
I'm sure that probably ties into it. I think at the base of it, it's more
emotional.
Yeah, I think emotional. And it seems to me that the people that I've met in my life that are musicians and do tap into that dark side or whatever have gone through really, you know, tragic things or whatever, or traumatic things. Most musicians I know haven't had like a peachy life for the most part.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's not to say that like there aren't musicians out there who are like that, but I think
it's rare.
Most of the greats that we look at throughout the history of music were pretty tortured souls at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And artists too, whether it be painters or sculptors or martial artists. I mean,
yeah. I'm with you on that. And I got this, it was really cool to see you firsthand, you know, as a friend and as a bandmate, you know, like you live through your lyrics again, like on stage, and then you getting off stage and, you know, coming back to your own, you know, like it's like an actor, like a method actor, you know, how they get into character.
Sure.
But then they come back after the scene, you know, after the done shooting, you know, it's cool getting to see you do that, you know, because I feel like every singer, like a legit, like, cause I'm not just saying this, but you are like one of like the best singers, like a legit, actual, like awesome singer in front. And you actually, you know, feel what you're singing because your lyrics are real. So it's cool getting to see you in your element, you know, and then coming back out of it, you know, when we're off stage and stuff. You know,
yeah.
It's cool seeing you. Oh, okay. I'm back to the real world now, you know?
Yeah, and it's a transition for sure, man. It's not like, it's not so much the method acting thing necessarily. That's it. That is a good metaphor. But I'd almost like to say it's like an alter ego in a sense.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's an absolute part of me. It's not an act. I don't plot my performances out, you know what I'm saying? Like everything's off the cuff for the most part.
Yeah.
If you fall into sort of routine when you get used to playing shows for so many years, but every show, you know, it's not choreographed, you know, necessarily or whatever. Like there's parts where I always headbang because those are the heavy parts of the song. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, on a perfect day, on a good show day, man, like I'm out there to express what it is that I'm there to express and try to communicate whatever it is I'm trying to communicate to the people that are there and present.
Exactly.
You know, well, it's therapy for me and therapy for them.
And I know what you're talking about because I noticed that, you know, I pay attention, maybe it's just from the almost 11 years of martial arts training, but I pay attention to fucking everything. Every little detail, like, and I noticed all your quirks, all of Meeg's quirks, all of AP's and Brian's, like, everyone has, like, their thing that they do, like, their own little individual routine.
Right.
On stage and off stage, but on stage-wise, I, like, somehow just kind of paid attention to everyone's movements, and everyone's like their natural flow to the sets. And like, I noticed yours as well, you know, and I would kind of know like the back of my hand, all right, Aaron, we're all going to headbang in this heavy part right now on left of me, you know, that one, like, you know, it's like all the fucking like just dive so fucking hard into that riff.
It becomes like a group dance in a sense, man. That's really,
you know what I'm talking about?
That's really what it is, because everybody does move differently. Everybody who plays on stage has their own way of like feeling the music in a physical way. Mm-hmm. And you know, as you play with people longer and longer, and you know, hopefully we're all paying attention to each other. And you just look out
for those butt slaps from you.
Yeah, you know. Good game.
Yeah. But you're right. Yeah, everyone's got their own individual little movement, but it's not choreographed, like you said. It's just everyone's naturally moving into the beat, but in their own way. But it's like a constant thing each night.
Right.
It's just like how everyone naturally flows,
changes and evolves and morphs, and you try a new sick move.
Yeah. I had to do I think it's the beginning of Left Me. Brian's like, just do it like a little stretch in your legs, man. Just do a little something like a cool, like own the stage, man. Own it.
Yeah, man. That's your real estate.
Yeah.
That's good real estate. You got to claim it.
I feel like for me, the only, cause you know, it's not, I didn't start. So I always like to keep my place, but I feel like on, the solo I played during my solo, like I just, I got on top of the ego box, you know. But other than that, I like to kind of keep my place, you know. And I hope I did a good job, not, you know, over, you know, because it's not like I don't want to be hopping over the place. Like, hey, look at me, I joined. I'm like riding on this. You know what I mean? Like, I like to keep it modest.
Just gotta play, man.
I know. So, well, listen, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk. I know you're a busy guy, but I miss you, buddy. Hopefully we're all going to be in Vegas together soon again, yeah?
I'm hoping so. Sooner than later, man.
Cool. Now, I know this, but, you know, everyone's going to be, like, asking, like, is there any expected, like...
No.
No? Okay.
As soon as it's done.
Yeah. See, I know that, but people have asked me on, like, my Instagram, like, my... ask me something. Everyone, like, people ask me a couple times, when's it gonna be released? And I was like, I don't know.
it's when it's done. The reality is, man, is that we could have pumped out a record already.
Yeah.
We could have been done for sure. But do I think it would have been our best work? No. So
yeah,
we are taking our time and making sure that we write a fucking rad album.
Yeah.
I want it to be unquestionable. You know what I'm saying? So
and that third album, I feel like is like the make or break album.
That's what everybody keeps saying. So
yeah, I notice every huge band that you've ever heard of, like it's like that third album that really like launches them.
Usually. So yeah, man. I mean, I wish it was done already. I do, but yeah. I've already on this album, I've rewritten songs completely from top to bottom. You know, I'll write a song and I'll sit down with it and I'll sing through it, and I'm like, nah, that's not it, and I'll scrap it.
Yeah.
So, and there's been times where I've been sent music, and I sat down and I wrote the first thing that came to mind, and everybody was like, "That's the shit." So it just kind of depends, man.
Yeah, it's a hit or miss. I mean, mostly, well, in your case, you got a lot of hits, but you have. I will say, and I'm not just saying this, but like you have written some very catchy songs, like lyrically and vocally. You know what I mean?
Thanks, man.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying that. Like, it's really true. I thought that as a fan, you know, and I still think that, and, you know, because I wouldn't play with a band that I didn't think was good, you know, just for the hell of it. I have to dig it, too, and I'm very grateful to be part of that legacy to some extent.
I'm glad you feel that way, and I'm glad you're here, man.
Thanks. No, honestly, like, I really do, you know, I think it's, like, I thought it's like some of the best fun I've ever had, and, yeah, I always told myself, you know, I'm going to sing, like, especially for those harmonies. You know, I told myself, I can't fuck up these harmonies. Aaron's vote, you know, his singing. Like, I told myself, I'm going to do the best job I can as a backup vocalist. you know, and I hope I did that, you know. I'm not fishing for compliments at all, but I really do hope that I served the backups justice during the harmonies and the hooks. I really hope I did.
Butt pat, Nick. Butt pat.
Oh, thanks, man. You know, that would always get me a little smirk, man. You know, I'd always get a little smile after that.
I learned it from dogs. Everybody likes the butt pat.
Well, I loved it. So I live for the butt pat.
Yep.
Well, cool, man. Thanks so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
No problem, brother. It's good to talk to you. And I will be in touch with you soon.
All right, man. I'll see you.
Later.
Have a good one.